Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit. Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com.
Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on the Premiere Networks on Saturday, August 22nd, 2015. This is episode 1213. Enjoy. The Tech Guy podcast is brought to you by Intel. Small business owners can't afford to choose between A or B. If both help your business, you want A and B. With Intel-powered 2-in-1s, you get performance and mobility. Power and freedom. That's the power of and. Experience it at smallbusiness.intel.com. And by the new Epson Workforce printers powered by PrecisionCore. Workforce is an award-winning line of all-in-one printers for your home office, small to large business, or corporate work groups. Visit Epson.com to find out more. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy. Time to talk computers and the internet. And, you know, really, when we're talking computers, we're just as much talking smartphones and smartwatches. That's the computer most of us use most of the time these days. Tablets. We'll talk about home theater in a bit with Scott Wilkinson, our home theater guru. He's back. Digital photography, too, because I'm kind of a photo buff. Maybe you are, too. 888-ASK-LEO is the number. 888-827-5536. That's toll-free from anywhere in the U.S. of A and Canada. Outside those areas, love to hear from you. But you'll have to use Skype to reach us from there. 1+1-888, which is toll-free in the U.S., as I said. 827-5536. Website is techguylabs.com. Techguylabs.com. And that's the place to go if you want information about stuff we talk about, that kind of thing. I put all the audio and video up there after the fact. We put the answers and questions and all that stuff. 8888. Ask Leo, techguylabs.com. Okay, business is out of the way. My goodness, it's been a busy week for smartphones, and it's going to get busier. The Galaxy Note 5, I've had that now for a week. I think I talked about that a little bit last week. Love it. Love it. The OnePlus 2 arrived early this week, and I've been playing with that as well. Half the price of the Note 5 and only three quarters as good. So I think it's still a deal, right? If my math is correct. And then the iPhone will be out in a couple of weeks. September 9th, which is a Wednesday. Apple will announce it. And now the story is, and you know, as we get closer to these dates, I think these rumors become more accurate. The story is that it will be available then a week from the following Friday. The 18th. So they announce it. That's what they almost always do. About 10 days later, you can get it. And in all likelihood, they'll announce it on Wednesday the 9th, let you order it on Friday the 11th at midnight. Good luck. Have fun. I'll be on a plane, I think, I'm going to New York City. I can't believe that. I won't miss the show. I'm flying to New York on September 9th, the day of the Apple announcement. I've never missed an Apple announcement. I've always been, you know, glued to the TV watching that. This will be a change for me, a shift. I'll be watching like you, see what Apple has to say. They are supposedly going to also announce a new Apple TV. That really needs updating, even though the main reason they wanted to make an Apple TV was so that you could watch live television on it so that it could be your cable box, in effect, without cable, over the internet. And those deals, apparently, according to the Wall Street Journal and others, are much delayed. Probably won't be till next year, I'm going to add, if ever. Because the networks and the content creators are all very nervous about this whole transition. They better get unnervous pretty quick because we've started to see statistics about what we call cord cutting. You're not really cutting the cord because you still have a cord, but instead of a cord to your local cable company, it's a cord to your internet service provider, which in many cases is your local cable company. which is one of the reasons it doesn't necessarily save you money, but it does give you more flexibility, more you can, it's more a la carte. You can choose what you want to watch. You get your Roku attached to the internet, and you can, you know, get HBO Now. That's $15 a month, so you can watch HBO shows. Showtime, that's $15, so you must watch Showtime. ESPN and Disney via Sling TV, that's $20. So now what are we up to? $50 plus your internet. It's the same as your cable bill. You're not, and you're still, and you're not getting, unless you're in an area where you could put an antenna on the roof, you're not getting your local stations, the live stuff. So Apple wants to kind of solve that. The problem is it comes down to price. Comes down to price. Apple wants to do what they did with music, you know, the 99-cent single, which the record industry went kicking and screaming. But they, at the time, they really didn't have much choice. Cable companies might have some choice. Cable TV subscribers falling horrifically. A recent study by Pacific Crest estimated that the top eight cable providers saw subscriptions fall in the second quarter. 463,000 people. The number of households with cable has fallen 10% in the past 5 years, at the same time as Netflix has seen the number of households with service double. So 35% of all households in the U.S. have Netflix. So you can see the writing on the wall, and this is accelerating. So these companies realize, well, I mean, I do something. You know what they do? It's simple. If you're Comcast or Cox or Time Warner, you just raise the cost of the internet service, and you're fine. And notice, by the way, that they've been kind of leveling off the cost of cable TV compared to the cost of internet service plus internet TV. It's about the same. That's not an accident. But I think we do it. I think we do it not so much to save money, or if you do, you learn quickly it doesn't save money. But more importantly, you do it because you hate your cable company, frankly. And it is an opportunity for internet service providers like Google and others to come in and say, hey, we can give you high speed internet for a lot less money. Competition is good. We like it. I'm not going to say anything about Ashley Madison. You have my deepest sympathy, that's all. Yeah, I'm not gonna say, what is there to say? There's actually, I'm kind of admiring the tech press on this a little bit, not a lot. Because there's been this, you know, when the celebrity nudes were leaked out, everybody in the tech jumped on that and gave you links. Oh, look, you can see. And then I think there was a little backlash, and people said, "Hey, that's exploitation. That's as bad as being the hacker who got these things. You shouldn't be doing that." And there's been kind of this a little bit of the same sentiment over this Ashley Madison thing. Let's not rush to the databases and search for people, famous people, shall we? And of course, there's always the sleazy sites like Gawker that'll do it anyway, and already have, but you're not going to hear me talk about it. My wife did look for my name, though. I was kind of surprised. I thought, honey, really? She didn't find it. Anyway, that's, what is that German word? Schadenfreude. There's a little, Schadenfreude's a great word. I wish we don't have anything like it in English. The shameful pleasure in the misfortune of others is Schadenfreude. That's kind of what's going on, isn't it? Ha ha. I'm not going to participate. I'm not going to talk about it. Let's talk about, that's why I like this show. Instead of talking about, you know, that stuff, I talk about things like the new Intel chip. Now that's exciting. people do that. I'm sorry. I apologize. But I'm excited by it. This is the Tech Guy Show. The new Skylake CPU has been... I can't even do it now. See, this is why Ashley Madison's ruining it for the rest of us. Because that's all anybody really wants to hear about. And if you don't know what we're talking about, don't worry about it. It was some skeezy website, and it's got hacked like every other website in the world. You know what? There is a lesson here. You put it on the internet, you're kind of putting it in public no matter what. They can tell you it's private. Oh, no, it's secure. This is the shameful thing is Ashley Madison was charging its customers $19 to, quote, put air quotes here, remove you from their database. And that's what made the hackers mad. They weren't doing it. They were just charging you $19. You're still in there. So that's making people really excited. I'm out 20 bucks, and my wife's still going to throw me out. The Skylake, back to the Intel CPU. It's exciting. Skylake, it's called. Faster, more powerful, more efficient chips. And what's great is the biggest improvement on this new chipset from Intel. Oh, I've run out of time. Sorry. It's Ashley Madison. Just took all the wind out of that. It's going to be the graphics processor. It's going to be much faster. You'll be able to run 3 4K monitors. Now, isn't that cool? Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Your calls next. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888. Ask Leo. That's the phone number. If you want to call and ask a question, make a suggestion, share a discovery, 888-827-5536. The phone ranger is here, Heather Hammond. Welcome back. You look great.
Where did I go?
I don't know.
To San Francisco.
You were here last week, weren't you?
Yeah.
Yeah, so welcome back. It's not.
Well, I miss you every week. It's five whole days.
Five whole days. Where have you been? Who answers my phone for me during the week? I don't know. Actually, don't call me during the week. Nobody does. Do you answer your phone anymore? For real? Like your phone? I don't.
That is a good question. Sometimes I regret doing it.
Yeah. Every time I regret doing it. I gave once to a Democratic candidate many years ago, and the Democratic National Committee just won't let me go. And I always say, and you're supposed to say this, you say, oh, thank you for calling. I don't give to solicitors on the phone, which I don't, because that's, a recipe for disaster. I will give, myself, I will initiate the conversation, but I'm not going to give to you on the phone. And then I say, please put me on your do not call list. And that's supposed to work, right? You're supposed to. They're never supposed to call you again. But the problem is then some other division of the Democratic Party calls me.
Right.
And then I had some guy call me. I don't know if this was a scam or not. He called me from Kentucky, and he said, you've stayed at a Hilton hotel in the last year, and we want to thank you for that. I said, that's great. He said, it could have been. And he started rattling off all these different Hilton hotels. Mm-hmm. I said, well, if you really were Hilton Hotel, I think you would know where I stayed and when. And then he started yelling at me. So I hung up on him. So this is why I don't answer the phone anymore.
Thank you.
That's why I need you. Could you just go around and follow me around during the week and say, Mr. Laporte's lumber, what would you like?
Oh, that'd be great. Yeah, just forward all your calls to me.
Tech guy.
No, thanks.
Wait, this is his daughter. No. You just want money.
Right.
I know.
They'll still try to get money
still,
out of
they
me.
Just, that's, you know. But, Dad... Yeah, because caller ID, if I don't really know that number, if it's not somebody, the number I recognize, I don't even bother to answer anymore. I figure it'll go to voicemail if it's important. You know what, though? Surprisingly, most people no longer leave voicemails, which tells me that most of the calls I'm getting are spurious or bogus or salespeople. And then the worst one is you pick up the phone and there's dead air for 4 seconds, and then it goes, hello, we're calling, and it's a robocall. And I just, I don't even care who it is.
Ain't nobody got time for that. Four seconds?
Yeah, I know.
He lost
this
me.
Long delay. You can always tell, right? It's like a website. It takes 4 seconds. I'm going somewhere else. Anyway, thank you for answering the phones today, because if you didn't, I'd just be ignoring all these calls. And looks like we got quite a few. And none of them are soliciting anything.
I don't believe so.
No. You filter those people out,
unless
I'm sure.
They're tricking me.
Who should I start with?
Oh my gosh! Well, we got to talk to Larry. He's calling from halfway around the block.
He's in Petaluma.
I said, why don't you just drive down, Larry?
Yeah, come on over.
Bring us some ice cream.
We're in a little town in Northern California. This is where. Oh, wait a minute! I wasn't supposed to tell anybody because of the witness protection thing. Never mind. I'm in Sunnyvale. Hi, Larry. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, Leo, I will bring you some ice cream later, I promise.
we have good ice cream up here.
Three twins.
Yeah, this has become, we're kind of in the wine country, the home of artisanal foods, beer, wine, and stuff. And it's not just here, but there are all sorts of places all over the country. This has become the thing, right? Carefully handcrafting. As we've got more industrialized in other areas of this country, these handcrafted items have become very popular. I'm sorry, I'm distracted. Go ahead.
That's okay. I'm soliciting something today. I'm soliciting help.
Okay. Would you like to know about the new Intel chips? Because I can, Skylake, I can
no,
tell.
I don't, I, I don't want to know about those. Okay. I've got an old. Actually, I've got a new Dell desktop.
Nice.
That I just got from Dell. It's got Windows 10 OEM.
Mm.
And I've got a terabyte hard drive. My question is, first of all, I tried to create a recovery backup via the Windows 10 menu on USB, and it fails every time. It doesn't work. So I called Dell, and they said they will send me recovery media when they have it, and they don't know when they're going to have it, which I think is blowing me off, honestly.
We'll send it to you when we get it, when we get around to it.
Which will be
that's
next
year. That's not good. You should be able to create that. I'm not sure why you can't create that. So it just fails part of the way through, huh?
Yeah, it says Windows can't complete it, and I've done it like 10 times. It doesn't work. So hopefully in enough it will work. And the other issue is I know you have in the past recommended the OS and programs on partitioning the hard drive, putting the OS and programs on C, and then perhaps putting your data on D. So I'm thinking about doing that. I did try to partition the drive. It's a terabyte. The smallest I could get the C drive to shrink to was like 400. It was about half, like 450. Which doesn't
it feels like something's wrong with your computer. I don't. It just these things don't sound right. You should be able to get it smaller than that, unless you've already filled it up.
No, I've got virtually nothing on there. I haven't transferred my data, which is going to be another question because Windows 10 no longer has a migration program.
Really, they took that out?
They took it out.
I mean, I always recommended doing it by hand. I never liked that settings and data transfer wizard or whatever they called it, easy transfer.
Well, I'm willing to do it by hand, but I am concerned about these other issues, and I have contemplated sending the thing back and waiting until Windows 10. I don't know if it's a Windows 10 issue or this particular.
No, in fact, I have a Dell, a late model Dell, the XPS 13, and I've made recovery media several times and under Windows 10, and no problem. It sounds to me like it came with Windows 10, right?
It came with Windows 10. Yeah. You probably did the upgrade, so you may have the, you may have the program merge with 7 too. I mean that function may be coming from 7. I don't know how that works. But.
I was able to. No, I don't think so. I mean, it's possible that Microsoft bundled a non-functioning tool in with Windows 10. Seems unlikely. I think that you should try a different thumb drive first of all. Have you tried more than one?
I have not, because I only have one. That
you really want to do this. You really do.
Yeah.
And then there are companies like Ease US, which we've recommended before. They have a number of free data recovery and partitioning programs. They have a migration assistant for Windows 10 that you can download. Ease, EaseUS.com. And they also have a very good partition manager.
Okay, I think I looked at them. I'm not sure that theirs is free, but that,
Well, they say it's you're right. It says Partition Master free, but I don't, you're right. It could very well be, you're halfway through and it says, by the way, only the first half is free.
Yeah, I think it's $50 in the end.
That they often get you in the end, don't they?
Yeah. So should I ask Dell to take this thing back? Because I'm still within the 30 days, and I don't
think either of those are yet cause for serious concern. Okay. Try another USB key. It might just be that one. And make sure it has to be. I think 8 gigs is the minimum.
Yeah, I've got a. This is 32.
Yeah, try another one just to see. I was able to do it, and then. Well, I'll talk about partitioning when we come back. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. It says free disk management software, highly recommended. Let's see what you get for free. Maybe that's the issue. What do you get for free? You get more in the, this is freemium, where they give you some stuff. It's normal speed, but the pro version is faster. You can merge partitions on both, but you can't resize dynamic volumes. Well, you're not doing that, I'm sure. WinPE bootable disk. I wouldn't worry about that. Command line, business usage, free tech. And by the way, the $31, I think this is kind of a compelling. People have used this, right? You guys use Partition Master from Ease US. So we're calling Scott Wilkinson, and all of a sudden Skype says, hold on a minute, we're improving your experience. No, you're not. That's not true. Skype's busy improving my experience, but it's not really helping the radio show any. It's kind of unimproving your experience. Our home theater guru, Scott Wilkinson, joins us every week to talk about the latest. Updates are ready to install. It won't take long to upgrade. I have an engineer in another room about to throw something. There he is. Hey, Scott.
Hey, Leo. How's it going?
It won't be long. It won't be long. So, Scott is the editor-in-chief at avsforum.com. He also does a great podcast on my network, so I'm a little bit biased. twit.tv/HTG for the home theater geek. Welcome back. Did you have a lovely 25th?
We had a lovely 25th in beautiful Ojai, California. Gorgeous weather, clear skies, great stars at night.
Fun.
Beautiful.
Isn't it? You're a home theater guru.
Yeah.
Isn't it nice to see stars for real instead of on a movie screen?
Very much so, yes.
Yeah. There's something about life. It's just hard to reproduce on a screen.
That's right. That's right. Yeah, you got greater dynamic range. And
it was a high dynamic range night. Oh, my gosh. The color gamut was incredible.
Yes.
And it was almost 3D.
Almost.
Very. Had a branch fallen off the tree in front of you, it would have been.
Yes. Yeah. Terribly.
Yeah. So what do you want? Good. Welcome back. We missed you last week, but that means there's lots more to talk about this week.
Indeed. Indeed. In fact, I got a great question from Jamie Hewitt Hunt, who was listening to my podcast of, I think, 3 weeks ago, where we were just doing kind of a Q&A, me and Mark Henninger, my cohort in crime at AVS Forum. And someone had asked the question, which is more important to the home theater or even out to the movies kind of experience, the video or the audio?
Oh, isn't that experience? Isn't that
and it's an interesting question.
Yeah.
And there are people with lots of different opinions about it. Jamie's opinion is very clear. He said, my thoughts are audio, hands down. Why? I've had a 5.1 system for 10 years, and I wouldn't watch a film without it. A movie without sound is called a silent movie. A movie without a picture is called radio or music or a podcast
But that's a little bit. I mean, it's rare that you – I mean, you don't have to choose –
But, you don't have to.
But so, I mean, I would like both, please. Can I have a good picture and good sound?
My thing was, maybe 50-50. But
sound is more important than maybe we recognize, I think.
It could very well be. I mean, people spend a lot of time, you know, worrying about the picture quality and the calibration of the TV, and they might not spend as much time on the audio, and they might not spend as much time thinking about the audio environment. Right, the acoustics of the room, and whether or not that makes things clearer or not. Dialogue intelligibility, for example, is a really important thing.
Yeah,
if you can't understand what the people are saying on the screen, then what's the point?
Yeah, that's true. It's one of the reasons I like 5.1 or other kinds of surround sound, because having a center channel means if it gets hard to hear, and as I get older, it is harder to hear dialogue. Mm-hmm. I can boost the center channel a little.
That's right,
and that really does make a difference in intelligibility.
Yeah. Oh, seriously.
Yeah.
And these new sound formats that are coming up for the what's called the ATSC 3.0, the new broadcast standard, which will have ultra HD or 4K capability and even immersive sound. But there are a number of them. For example, DTS X and MPEG-H certainly have this ability to do exactly what you said. If there are certain elements of the sound mix, like the dialogue, or if you're watching a sports thing, it's the announcer, one of these systems even has what they call a degruntifier.
What?
Which is if you're watching a sports thing like tennis, they're all grunting. They will turn that soundtrack into what's called an object, and you can turn that down
separately
from the announcer. So if that's annoying you, you can do that. Or say for example in a race car, in a car race situation, you could actually have an audio feed from the one of the drivers to their pit crew.
That's cool. I like
and
that.
You, And you could choose which driver you want to listen to.
Can you have a... didn't they do this in the World Cup some years ago? The D-Vuvuzellerer?
Yes. Oh,
if you get a million of those going at once.
Oh, I love that sound. I just
you need the button
sound
that turns it up. Or adds
I do.
It. Yeah.
I do.
All sporting events.
Didn't they in the last World Cup, they actually forbade people to bring their vuvuzellas. No.
We had these, they didn't call them vuvuzellas, but we had these when I was a kid. You know, you'd go to a football game, you'd get a little plastic trumpet, which is basically this, right?
Yeah, exactly.
It's a kazoo tissue.
I have one that you actually gave me.
I have two because we have fans from South Africa who sent us two from the World Cup.
Yeah.
I have one and you have one. So if we ever want a duet.
Well, we're hardly ever in Petaluma at the same time, but when we are... Yeah. I will definitely play a duet.
So can I get a TV with a degruntifier now, or is that...
No, that's coming up. That's the future.
I'm in. That,
yeah, me too. it all has to do with this thing called object-based audio, which is you take each audio element, like the dialogue or the microphones that are picking up the grunts and the ball hits and so on, and treat them separately, independently, and allow the end user, the person at home, to control the relative mix between them. This is called personalization, audio personalization. And it's coming. It's not here yet, but it's on its way. I just wanted to give you a little taste of the future.
Yeah,
there,
I like that idea.
It is kind of a cool idea.
It doesn't make sense in theaters because you want to have a standardized mix, but at home...
Correct. Yes.
Why not, right?
Exactly. Some member of the family might be hard of hearing, and you want to, as you say, crank up the dialogue to make sure everybody understand what the heck's going on. That is, except in a Christopher Nolan film. Where,
right.
Like as in Interstellar, where
he made a mumble.
He made them mumble. He specifically mixed it so you couldn't understand what they were saying.
That drives me crazy because as an older person, I just blame myself. I think, oh, man, I really am going deaf. And then I find out, no, it's Christopher Nolan making me feel that way.
Yeah.
Lately, exactly I've seen a lot of, there have been a lot more TV shows and movies where they do that. I don't know. You know, I blame Robert Altman because he created that in the MASH and Nashville, mm-hmm. this kind of natural, like everybody's talking at once. McCabe and Mrs. Miller, he did it, and it really annoyed the critics at the time. And then I guess he was very influential because a lot of directors are doing it. It's very much more naturalistic.
Yeah,
but I'm become the guy who goes, "What? Yeah?
What?
What'd he say? Who's that? How did he get on screen?
Right? Damn kids, get off my lawn!"
Gosh, my wife's a little younger. What did he just say? She's playing Plants vs. Zombies, so she actually has no idea.
What?
It's a real comedy, let me tell you, in the living room when we're watching
I'm
a TV
sure
show.
Sure, that's true.
But I think a lot of those new HBO shows, stuff like that, they do the same thing. The dialogue is all kind of mishmashed together, and it's a style. Scott Wilkinson, anyway. AVS Forum. We believe that audio is as important as video and or picture, and you should make both as good as you can. Although somebody's saying in the chat room that Dolby did a test where they blurred the picture in a theater a little bit, and then they messed up the sound a little bit, and people sat through the blurred picture but left when the sound was bad. So there you go. Bye, Scott. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. More to come right after this. It's good timing. Skype failed us right at the right time. Audio and video are like yin and yang.
Why do some shows' DVDs not have captions? Hard to watch with mom. Yeah, that's a good question. I thought it's up to the DVD producer, certainly, whether or not they want to include closed captioning. But I thought most did. I don't remember seeing a DVD or a Blu-ray lately that didn't have that option. So that's kind of interesting. Now, broadcast TV, I thought most broadcast TV does too. I haven't done any research on this to sort of know what the percentage is, but it's kind of up to them. Rusty Bones felt a quake in San Diego when my computer crashed. Uh-oh. Maybe it's the electromagnetic ghosts. Tripod is asking, I bought the Roku streaming stick, which I have one too, and it won't work in the powered MHL HDMI port. No, I don't. Well, you know what? I think there might be two versions of the stick now that you mention it. He asked if there's two versions of the stick. And I do remember hearing something about a second version. But that would have to be powered by USB, then, like the Chromecast. You'd have to have a USB cable that goes into into a USB port to provide the power. I don't know much about that. I do have the Roku stick that is powered from MHL, which is a type of HDMI port. And it works okay. It does tend to crash sometimes. It's not as reliable as the Roku box, in my opinion. So that is iPad Matt is asking the perennial question. If buying a new TV today, should we go for 1080p or 4K? Up till now, I have said 1080p, and that's still a perfectly viable answer for now, because with UHD, we still don't have much settled in the way of high dynamic range, wide color gamut, standards, that is. But I have to tell you that the Vizio M65 has changed my mind on that, because the M65, 65-inch, it's the M series. It comes in a variety of sizes. The M65 is on the order of $1,500, I believe, and it's a stellar performer. It's 4K of UHD. It does not have high dynamic range. It does not have wide color gamut. Well, it does, but it can't. It probably somewhat wider, but it can't. It doesn't conform to any standard in that regard. But for that kind of money, and the performance is outstanding. I mean, it just looks great. So for that kind of money, for a 65-inch.
We'll just have to wait till next time. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888 Ask Leo. That's the phone number. Back to the phones we go to Julie in West LA. Hi, Julie.
Thank you so much, Leo. I called you. This is Grandma Julie. I called a couple of weeks ago and you told me about the Mac Pro.
Yeah.
And
what'd you end up doing?
And I went through it with it. She tried to call you last week, but she couldn't get in because sometimes it's really, really tough.
Oh, it's very hard. Yeah, I know.
Anyways, I'm giving another call. I was a little luckier again. I won the lottery today getting what you do.
What's your granddaughter's name again?
Emily.
Emily. Okay.
Yeah.
Just to refresh my memory, is she going off to college? Is that what's going on here?
In college, but okay. She's got a very old Mac, and she really would like to
update.
Get a new one, yeah. As with her brother who's graduating high school this year.
Oh, you're going to go to the well one too many times, kids. Now,
let me tell you. Anyway, I said I would help at least figure it out, and you had told me about some advantages of the new Mac that's coming out, and I just don't want to buy the old one when the new one is right around the corner. And do you have any idea when they're
Yeah, Apple doesn't tell me. I don't know why. I wish they would. They want to keep selling what they've got until the very last moment. So I tell you why I think there will be a new one, because Intel has announced, as I mentioned at the beginning of the hour, but nobody was paying attention, a new chipset that would be, I think, very nice in both the laptops and the desktops. Is she does she want a laptop or she want a desktop?
Laptop. Yeah. And she really considered the one you said you bought your son, which was the Air.
Yeah.
She does a lot of fashion and photo kind of stuff.
That's so right.
The Retina, I think, was one that you had mentioned.
The 13-inch MacBook Pro would be probably the best thing if she's a designer. If she wants slightly bigger, they do make a 15. It's more expensive and bigger, but might be too big to kind of lug around. She should go to the Apple store and take a look. You know, that's the nice thing about an Apple store. That's why Apple opened them, is so that people could spend some time.
She's gone back a couple of times to do it. Thank you for that suggestion. And that's where she figured she wasn't going to carry anymore. You know, it's enticing to have a lighter weight on, like the Air.
There is a middle ground. It's expensive. The MacBook, which is very, very thin and light. It's only 12.9 inches, something like that, maybe 12 inches. But it's a Retina display. But they made it pricey because it's the first one. All of these, I expect, will be refreshed probably, but like the end of the year, early 2016. Because these Intel chips, we've been waiting for the laptop versions of these Intel chips. And of course, once they come out, Apple's usually pretty quick to jump on them. But there's no promises. So I hate to say wait for something because you just don't know how long you're going to be waiting.
That's it. And the semesters are spinning and we're
I don't think there's anything wrong. If she likes the 13, it's a good kind of middle ground between the MacBook Air and the 15-inch. That's a great laptop. That's the one I have. I really like it.
Oh, thank you so much. Well, I'm sorry she didn't get to talk to you, but I've been taking notes on everything you've said, and thank you very much.
They're good about
call here.
You're welcome.
Keep at it.
They're good at the Apple Store about letting people just kind of go in there and play with it for a while. That's, you know, Apple used to not have Apple Stores. They'd sell in Best Buy and so forth, and it was always kind of a hit and miss with the retail experience. And they realized, really, if people are going to buy Apple equipment, they're going to want to try it, and they're going to want to try it in a positive environment. The only negative now is the Apple Stores are so popular, they're always crowded, especially on a Saturday. But that's a good way to really kind of lift them, test them, look at the screen, see how she feels about it. I like the middle ground. The 13, that's the one I would say it would probably be just right for her.
It's pretty heavy, too.
It's not bad. It's about it's under 4 pounds. I think about 3 pounds.
Just eat your Wheaties and you'll be okay.
You know, it's funny that, you know, the difference is 1 pound.
Yeah.
But that 1 pound, I guess, makes... I carry my 13-inch around. I don't mind. It's not bad.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think it's a good size for a student. That'll get her through the rest of school easily, probably beyond. And I think if she's doing photography and fashion design, it's a beautiful screen.
Great. Yeah. And she's taking a lot of business courses as well, so... You know, it's really going to be serving a lot of purposes.
Good for her. Now let's talk about the grandson. What does he want?
he just wants something that's not giving him a lot of trouble. Maybe the Air is the good answer.
The Air or maybe a Chromebook. You could save a little money there. There's some very nice Chromebooks within $300 to $500 range. They don't do everything a Macintosh does, but that in some ways is a benefit. They're much less complex. They're much more secure. Most of what you do online. Now, if he's in school, that's not a problem. He'll always be online. I think those are something to consider anyways, the Chromebooks. And you can go to somewhere like Best Buy and check those out.
Do they sell Apple at Best Buy also?
Yeah, I think they do, but I would always go to the Apple Store if you can.
I think you're right.
Better information and a broader range.
Well, I'm beginning to really love your program because I'm beginning to learn more and more as
Aren't
I listen
great.
To you. So thank you again.
Pretty soon you'll be asking me which Linux distro to pick up.
Well, no, I'm going to get into the camera questions.
Oh, yeah. Now we're spending money. Do you travel, Grandma Julie? Do you do a lot of traveling?
I used to, but not as much. Just really in the United States.
So the pictures will be of the kid, of the grandkids mostly now?
No, I do lots of other good stuff.
Good. Bird pictures, kitty cat pictures. Cameras...
No, I take pictures for a couple of newspapers.
Oh, wow. You like to do the raves, the concert scene, maybe the Coachella, that kind of stuff?
Yeah, creative things that, you know, go along with the calendar. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. You're welcome. My pleasure. Great to talk to you, and I'm glad you were able to get back in. I know it's hard. You know, we're on 200 stations now, and that means, you know, there's probably – tens of thousands of people trying to get through. And we only have 6 lines. And you might say, well, Leo, you should have hundreds of lines. But the problem is I only go through about 8 calls an hour. I'm not going to keep you on hold till next year. So 6 lines is plenty. Do like, by the way, it's a little pricey, but I'm really liking the Sony RX100. I think that's what they are. Point-and-shoot cameras are really, for a point-and-shoot, pretty amazing cameras, and they keep coming up with new ones. I think they're up now to the Mark IV, about $400 or $500, but boy, just a stunning point-and-shoot camera. The Sony RX100, if you're over at the store and you want to pick one up. Jeffrey in Charlotte, Florida is coming up. Now, there's a Charlotte in almost every state, I think. Charlotte, Florida, coming up in just a second. He wants to know, great question. We asked it last week. And we're going to ask it now. Do bigger screens on your phone, as we get bigger and bigger, these phablets, use more data? Hey, Jeffrey.
How you doing?
Are you the guy who asked the question in the chat room last week?
Yeah, it's Captain J's in the chat room.
Hey, Captain J.
Yeah, it's Port Charlotte, Florida.
That makes more sense than Charlotte, Florida. Yeah, Port Charles. All right. Hey, let me ask you this, because we talked about it off the air, and I think you probably heard the discussion. What do you think?
I was wondering if a big screen or large screen phone used up more data than a smaller screen phone.
What is your thought on that?
I would think it would.
You know, my initial thought, as I thought about it last week, was, well, no, because, you know, the websites and so. But, you know, there is one area where it does, and that's when you're streaming media. Sites like YouTube and Netflix notice the higher resolution screen and will start giving you higher resolution video, and that can add up very quickly. So you're absolutely right, Captain Jay. It does in some cases. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Look at that screen. I guess... Jason's telling me I didn't talk about the Note 5. I can't keep track anymore. That's London.
So anyway, yeah, hey, everybody. Glad to be back here for a few minutes. Compter and I have been talking about in the chat room about Atmos movies and what would be a good DVD or Blu-ray, rather, to show Atmos at home, since he just got a brand new receiver, which I think has Atmos capabilities. And my favorite so far in the Blu-ray department is Gravity. It is a wonderful Atmos mix. There are 13, 14, 15 movies out in Atmos on Blu-ray currently. When Mission Impossible comes out, Mission Impossible 5, Rogue Nation, that is going to be stunning in Atmos. I saw it in Atmos, heard it in Atmos. When it was in the theater, when I saw it, and probably still in the theater, some theaters anyway. But if you can see it in an Atmos theater, do, because it's really great. I loved how they mixed the music, the actual score, into the Atmos sound field, way out into the audience. Really was very impactful. Really great. Sarah Jane UK, so glad to see you back. Absolutely. And Amy Ashi, we've been talking about a new Carmike Theater in Louisville, Kentucky. And I know that Carmike is a chain of theaters that has announced that they're going to install DTS:X immersive sound rather than Dolby Atmos or Oro. So I don't know if there are any in L.A., but if they are doing that in Louisville, that should be very interesting. My podcast this week, actually, is with Brian Vessa, who's involved in the standardization of the creation of immersive soundtracks. I've been concerned that with Dolby Atmos, DTS:X, and Oro, you know, that the studios are going to kind of say, eh, nuts to immersive audio because it's too hard, too cost too much, really, to create a soundtrack in each of these formats. And so what we're going to be talking about on the show this week is the standardization of that process. So the studios only have to do it once, and then it can get distributed and rendered out in any of the formats that are currently available. So I think that's going to be quite interesting. Thank you, Amy Ashi. Home Theater Geeks is a great, fun show. I've been doing it for 5.5 years now, and it's been wonderful every time. oh, here's a good question from Beatmaster. Thank you, Beatmaster, for restating this question. Are UHD TV owners without high dynamic range, HDR, still able to use UHD Blu-rays, or is it incompatible? We don't know because we haven't seen UHD Blu-ray yet, but given the specs, I would say it will be compatible. That HDR typically is going to, well, there's a couple different ways to do it, and this is the problem, isn't it, that there's no standard yet. But for the most part, I believe the HDR standards will allow backward compatibility. They will simply show on the TV what it's capable of showing. If it's not capable of that higher dynamic range, there will be sort of a base layer. I know this is how Dolby Vision works. I'm not 100% sure it's how the SMPTE standard works. I have to do some research on that. So thank you, Rusty Bones, or Beatmaster, rather, for asking this question, part of the answer of which I don't know. But overall, I think it's not going to be a problem. Although you're not going to get the benefit of high dynamic range if you don't have that capability in your set. And believe me, you want that capability in your set when you can, because it really does make a big difference in the picture. Much bigger, in my opinion, than the number of pixels. CyberSec is asking, do we have a release date from ELAC yet? Last I heard it was September. Then these are these new speakers designed by Andrew Jones. He went from Pioneer over to this company, ELAC. And as far as I know, it's still September. The debut speakers, will they be better than a Bose system? 100% guarantee yes, absolutely. I am not a big fan of most Bose products. I think they are better at marketing than they are at actual products. The exception to that, one exception to that, are the noise-canceling headphones, which I do use routinely. They are the best noise cancelers that I have found. But in terms of speakers, no, absolutely get the debuts from ELAC. No question about it. That is the answer to that question. Let's see. What else have we been talking about? I did see the Mission Impossible movie, Gravity. Let's see. I had another couple questions that I had queued up here for Leo. One was concerning HDR, high dynamic range. What kind of input are you going to need on your TV to get that from the new 4K Blu-ray players? And the answer is you're going to need HDMI 2.0A, because the A version includes the ability to convey high dynamic range data. So that is going to be very important for that. Also, you're going to need HDMI 2.0A and HDCP 2.2. This is high definition copy protection. And there are several versions of that. And so what we want to see for 4K Blu-ray, they're going to certainly use HDCP 2.2, which is a hardware copy protection system. And so you're going to need that, and you're going to need HDMI 2.0A. Another wrinkle is that the 2.0, HDMI 2.0, can be implemented at two different speeds, two different bit rates, 10.2 gigabits per second and 18 gigabits per second. And you definitely want 18 if you can determine that. The manufacturers are being pretty squirrely about revealing that kind of information, which is really unfortunate if you ask me. So try and do a little digging, and I try to determine that on any product I talk about in this regard, whether or not it's operating at 10.2 gigabits or 18 gigabits. You want the higher bit rate because that makes it less prone to obsolescence, or quick obsolescence anyway. So that is the answer to that question. Amy Ashi said, got the company wrong. It's the new Xscape, X-S-C-A-P-E. That's kind of interesting. Oh, good. I see I've got 47 seconds left. Thank you, Leo, for pointing at it. That's very good. So I'm going to have to go check that out. That's very interesting. Compter says Bose speakers equal buy other speakers.
I like Bose.
Oh, you do?
Well, I miss my 901s. Actually, my
well, okay, yeah, those are 30 years old. Yeah, those were good speakers.
Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk computers. Let's see here. I have a list. The internet, home theater, digital photography, gallon of milk, a loaf. Oh, wrong list. Wait a minute. Let me cross those off. Anything with a chip in it. 888-ASK-LEO. That's the phone number. 888-827-5536. Toll free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada outside those areas. Well, use Skype. You can still call us. 888-827-5536. I love that question, by the way. Just to kind of reiterate, because I promised we'd talk about this last week, and I never did get around to it. As we see higher and higher resolution phone screens, and then really that's the issue, not the bigger size, but the more dots on a screen. And many of these newer screens, like this Note 5, this new Samsung Note 5, are quad you know, resolution, quad HD, they're very high resolution screens, more than 500 dots per inch, well beyond our ability to perceive dots on here. And it gives it just a rich and gorgeous. I think there's a point of diminishing returns, of course. But you look at these screens and then you look at a lesser screen and it's just so beautiful. You almost don't want to use a lesser screen. But the question is, am I now going to use more bandwidth when I surf the internet? Or and you know, it's not the case that in all likelihood a web page is not going to get bigger because you're on a higher res screen, unless, and you're starting to see more of this, it's what we call responsive design. It's responsive means they'll give you a different image depending on the resolution of the device you're using. And so you may, in fact, notice that websites do weigh more when you visit them on a higher resolution screen because they're giving you higher resolution images. The pictures are better because they have to keep up with the screen. You may also, as I mentioned, streaming video and so forth, they're going to respond to your capabilities. More bandwidth often will give you higher quality. But if Netflix or YouTube sees that you have an HD or even a 4K display, it's going to start sending you higher quality video, and that means more bits. So while it's unpredictable how much more data you'll use on a higher res screen, it is probably the case that you might use more data, believe it or not. They sure look better. I have to say, I have, you know, to compare this Note 5, I have the similarly exciting new half the price OnePlus 2. And it is, both of these are roughly the same size screen, maybe a little bit smaller on the Note 2. But the Note 2 is only 1080p, and it just doesn't grab you. I don't know if it's important that the screen grab you. But it doesn't. You look, if you showed the two of them side by side, as I have to a few people, they'll always pick that. They say, "Oh, that Note 5 looks really good. Boy, that's beautiful." Then you tell them, "Yeah, and as a result of the super high resolution screen, it has half the battery life." Oh, there is a trade off there. Oh, and it's twice as expensive. Oh, so there's a trade off there. Ed in San Diego's next. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Ed.
Hi, Leo. How you doing?
I'm well. Welcome.
Yeah, I had something happen to me last week that kind of freaked me out with my phone. Uh-oh. I was researching testosterone products, sexual enhancement, and I happened to be in privacy mode because I don't like ads being left on my phone.
Yeah. So you used the browsers. What browser were you using?
I was using Safari.
Safari. And so you went into privacy mode on Safari.
Right, and so I clicked on this link. It was for free testosterone product.
Yeah.
And immediately it locked my screen up and told me what I was doing was illegal. Went through a whole bunch of stuff. I clicked, it had me click OK at the bottom.
Is this on a phone or a desktop?
A phone.
Huh. And, yeah, that's all bogus, by the way.
It went to another screen and wanted me to pay them $500 to unlock my screen.
That's all bogus. And that's all done with JavaScript. You can ignore that.
Well, it wouldn't let me out of Safari.
It kept
me in there. I tried to kill it several times. Finally, what I did was I went into history and settings. I shut my Wi-Fi off.
Yeah.
Went into history, killed my history inside settings. And then it freed it all up. But I was worried that maybe there was something left in there, some malware or something.
No, so what it's doing...
I couldn't find any. I searched the phone several times, but I couldn't find any.
Yeah, what it's doing, this is really annoying. And it goes back to an earlier time. I don't know if you ever remember. We used to call them porn storms. If you'd go to a website that was maliciously crafted using JavaScript, it would first prevent you from closing the window, and then would open many, many more windows, many of them with pitches for other products, a lot of them adult sites and so forth. It was kind of embarrassing. By the way, you don't have to start it by going to an adult site, just some bad site that decided to take advantage of you. And you'd be sitting there in the office, and all of a sudden the screen would be filling with hundreds of web pages, many of them adult. That's embarrassing as heck. And it seemed, you know, you can't quit out of it. You can't. But that's just JavaScript. It's not harmful in the sense that it's not leaving anything on your computer. JavaScript is what we call sandboxed. It's the browser is preventing any damage to your computer, any writing to the hard drive from that web page. And unless there's a flaw, which occasionally happens, unless there's a computer security glitch, you know, the operating system or JavaScript itself or the browser itself has a flaw in it, you're safe. It's annoying. It's annoying as heck. Privacy mode has nothing to do with it because even when you're in privacy mode, JavaScript still gets executed. Most websites these days need JavaScript. On a desktop computer, you can run an extension on your browser. There are a number of them. There's the most popular is probably called NoScript. What NoScript does is say, tells the browser, don't run JavaScript unless I explicitly say go ahead. Put NoScript on your browser and then surf around. You'll see that it's a very diminished experience. Almost all websites use JavaScript to enhance the experience of the website. It's kind of the way the modern web is. And yet, this really kind of pernicious ability to commandeer your system exists. We had a very similar call last week. You did the right – what you did was the right thing. I would have tried – I don't know if you tried this – double-tapping the home button on your iPhone, which brings up the task manager, shows all the things, and then swiping away Safari. That should kill the process. You could then reopen Safari, unless Safari jumps back to the last page, and that would be a bad thing. So then you'd have to do as you did, which is clear the history, and you should be fine. There's no – that's – it's annoying – but it's unfortunately just kind of a side effect of what Java can do. JavaScript. Don't want to confuse the two. There's Java, which is different from JavaScript, despite the name. JavaScript can do things like open new windows, can hide close buttons, things like that. If it really starts to bother you on the desktop, there's NoScript. Apple does not allow NoScript on iPhones, on iOS. They don't allow that kind of plug-in. I understand that they're going to put an ad blocker in iOS 9 or allow you to. They're not going to put one in. They're going to allow you to install one. So maybe they're going to start giving us better tools to prevent this kind of thing. Seems to me the browser should handle that, but it doesn't. And it's just, I think it's just because in order to allow JavaScript, you have to allow JavaScript to do all the things it can do. Harmless, just annoying. I guess that's the bottom line. Harmless but annoying. And we're seeing it more, unfortunately. Remember we went through a period of pop-unders where you'd go to a website, it would seem all was well, and then you close the page of the website and there was a little ad underneath it? It's like that. And I think if we all stand up and say, stop it, maybe it'll go away. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hey, let me tell you about Intel, shall I? It's so nice to have a company like Intel sponsor the show. So thank you, Intel. We're big fans of the Intel processors, as you know. I was trying to talk about them the other day. I want to talk a little bit about Intel's 2-in-1 strategy. You've probably seen these computers, and I love them. They are both tablets and laptops. You get both performance and freedom. And what I love about Intel is they come up with these really nice designs, and then they go to manufacturers and say, "Here's what we think people want," and they show them to them. For instance, if you go right now to smallbusiness.intel.com, you can experience the power of AND, as they call it. The idea of these laptops that are both laptops and tablets. Intel empowers them with the Core M processor, running 2.5 times faster than a 4-year-old laptop. The battery life, too, on these 5th-generation Core processors, incredible. Up to 8.7 hours. That's 2.5 times longer than a 4-year-old laptop. The M gives you a very nice thin form factor and ultra-fast in a mobile device. Core M, I love. 2-in-1 provides optimal combination of business class performance, great battery life. Both the 5th-gen Core and the Core M wirelessly stream everything you need, presentations, videos, websites, and more live from your PC to your display. So visit smallbusiness.intel.com to find out how an Intel-powered 2-in-1 can improve your business, and follow them on Twitter. Their small business account is Intel Small Biz, at Intel Small B-I-Z. Love the 2-in-1s, powered by Intel's latest family of core processors. Impress your clients at the touch of a tablet. Handle robust programs on the go. It is remarkable. You can do it right, and you can do it right now. There is a better way to work. That's the power of and. Experience it at smallbusiness.intel.com. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. So fortunately, we have some people in the audience here today who have iPhones, and it does turn out that you can turn off. There's a block pop-ups command in Safari on the mobile phone, and you can disable JavaScript. Although, should you disable JavaScript, and that's under the advanced settings for Safari in your settings, should you disable it, you're going to have a very different and probably not as positive an experience of the web. There's also, though, under privacy and security in the Safari settings, I see a fraudulent website warning. That'd probably be a good start. Turn that on. You've got this locked down. Do not track is turned on. That's good. I think that in all likelihood, just double tapping the home button so you get to the recently used apps screen, you know, where you get the slideshow of all the apps, and swiping away Safari, which just force closes it, is sufficient. I hate to say turn off JavaScript because it's really going to disable so many features of the web. It's an interesting conundrum. People who are very security conscious often say, well, I'm going to use a plugin that will disable JavaScript, or I'm going to turn off JavaScript in my browser. But boy, most websites are just going to say, you know, I'm not going to work. My website won't work. And we don't use JavaScript much, but we use it a little bit. I guess you don't have to use JavaScript, but a lot of the functionality we've gotten used to on the web does. Karen in Ventura, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Karen.
Hi. Hey. I'm glad to talk with you.
Thanks for calling.
I have a Palm Pixie phone.
You do?
Sorry?
You should call a museum.
Oh, I don't know. Someone gave it to me.
It's kind of an old phone. Yeah.
Okay, and I'm trying to transfer the pictures to the laptop, but when I connect it with the wire, it has an error on my phone. It goes crazy, and then it says too many cards open. Nothing. I'm not sure what I'm supposed to do to get the pictures from my phone to the laptop, or I can use someone else's computer.
Yeah. Do you have the desktop software for the phone?
No, I just have the phone. It was
just the phone. Okay. This Pixie is running not the traditional Palm OS, but I think it was called Web OS that they created, which was very nice. And the cards are, you know, when you have programs, I don't know if you've noticed this, but when you have programs running, there's some cards you can swipe back and forth from different cards to see what else is going on, right?
Mm-hmm.
Have you noticed that? Yeah. So I think what they're telling you when they say there are too many cards open is I don't have enough memory to finish this job.
Oh, okay.
So I would say close all of those open apps so you don't have anything open except for whatever you need to transfer the photos over. It just sounds like it's running out of memory.
Okay. Well, I was thinking when it said too many cards, I took the battery out and then restarted it. And then I didn't have anything else open, and I just plugged the phone.
Yeah? And what did it say then?
And then it still said the same thing.
Well, I guess you have so little memory in that it can't even do that. It was a nice small phone, wasn't it?
This is my first phone.
Oh, nice. It's about 6 years old.
Oh.
Palm, shortly after releasing that, was sold to HP. And HP killed the whole thing, including WebOS. So support for this is going to be difficult. You're right to call me because nobody else is going to help you with this. I don't unless you can find who's your carrier. Verizon.
Yeah.
Verizon. If you find somebody smart at a Verizon store, they might be able to help you. I'm just looking through the specifications on this on the internet just to see what we can do. You connect it up via a USB cable.
Mm-hmm.
And when you connect it to your computer, does the computer see a drive? Does it see the Pixie as storage?
No, it has a problem with it too.
It can't see it either.
No.
On a Windows machine?
Yeah.
It might be that it needs some drivers for that. I'm not sure. This has been you're stretching my memory thin. That 2009 was so long ago. I dimly remember 2009. You should be able to just plug it in. Have you done it before? Copied pictures off of it before?
No.
Maybe there's something wrong with it. One thing you might be able to do is email those pictures to yourself.
I'm sorry. This is I can only use the phone and text.
Okay. You have no data.
Pictures. I'm trying to save money.
Yeah. But you do have pictures on the phone.
I don't have internet.
Yeah, no data. Yeah. Okay, so you can you can't. Well, you might be able to text those pictures. Have you tried doing that?
Yes. Won't do it either.
Won't do that either. Okay. That's a feature called MMS. You probably have to pay for that as well.
Oh, okay. MMS.
But you may have to pay for that as well. I'm looking. The chat room has given me a link to a Verizon page. Software update for the Pixie. Do you have a Pixie update? Or a Pixie Plus?
I don't know.
There might be a software update for the Pixie that might fix this problem. So the card's error message is essentially saying you don't have enough memory. Close some programs, but you did the right thing. One of the right things. You took the battery out. That closed the programs pretty quick. And then you put the battery back in, turn it on, you don't start anything else up, and it's still saying that.
Yes, that's what happened.
I think the first thing you want to try to do is see if you can get that Pixie to show up on your desktop on your computer. Because if you can, the Pixie doesn't have to do anything. You should just be able to drag them off the storage. So that might mean, let me see if we can get Palm Pixie drivers. You might mean, because that's what you need to get for Windows. Hewlett Packard is offering them. So despite the fact that Hewlett Packard owns them now. So you can actually, although this is not from a Hewlett Packard site.
Oh.
You know what I would do? Yeah, Hewlett Packard does offer maybe a download tool for updating the drivers. Boy, this is making me nervous. This is from a third-party site. I do not know. It does feel like the phone is out of memory. Do you have a lot of stuff stored on there, or a lot of text messages on there?
I'm filling up a lot of memo pad.
Maybe delete some of those if you don't need them. We're trying to free up some storage. Maybe that's the problem. Might not just be RAM. It's out of. Might be out of storage. So delete some things. Things you don't need. And then what I would do is Google Palm Pixie drivers on your Windows machine, download and install those, and then see if the Windows machine will, what we call mount it, will make that Pixie show up on the desktop. If it can, then you can copy everything out of the drive. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. WebOS, wow. So HP does have a WebOS site. The legacy continues. The good news is they've open sourced it. There's the Pixie. Considered the smallest smartphone on the market. I don't know if nowadays that's really a good thing. So they've open sourced it. Let's go to support and see what kind of support. No support. As previously announced, services for WebOS devices are scheduled to end May 12, 2015. We appreciate our customers' loyalty to the WebOS platform. As part of the shutdown of services, the links on this site are no longer available. We are sorry for the inconvenience. Great. Nice. floating down the beautiful Saône River in France on the riverboat, the SS Catherine. It's Johnny Jett. He is our travel guru. Hi, Johnny.
How you doing? Bonjour. Bonsoir.
Bonsoir. It is late at night in beautiful France. Where are you now?
We're on our way to Lyon. I think we're a couple hours away, and I think we just pulled into a lock, so we'll see if this thing...
Oh, as soon as we get in the lock, I'm going to lose you. Quit. Is the boat going up or going down?
We're going up.
Okay. It should get better. In fact, I'm surprised I'm talking to you, even. Johnny's been sending back, if you follow him on Instagram, he's been sending back amazing pictures of his trip, his riverboat trip through France, and it's making me insanely jealous.
You're
having so tomorrow. Much fun. This is a funny one. This is your legs in the mirror of the counter beneath the representative behind the counter. It looks like she's wearing shorts.
Yeah, I know. I was like, stay right there.
That's perfect.
That's what I was doing.
So Johnny is a travel guru who actually travels, so that's a good start. And he joins us every week to help us travel better using technology, gives us a website, an app. What do you got this year? I mean, this week.
And I also gave you a tip. By the way, I didn't like my tip last week. I was still jet-lagged. I think I actually did a repeat. So let me start off with a great tip, especially for people going through Heathrow. So if you have a lot of...
Here's my tip for people going through Heathrow. Don't.
I knew you were going to say that. I love Heathrow, except... You know, the security is just ridiculous. If you have a chapstick, any kind of liquid, just one little thing in your bag that you forget to put in a plastic bag, they're going to put you to the secondary, and it could take up to a half hour. And
wow.
You can miss your connection. It's crazy. But I also take every electronic out of my bag and put it in the bin. So my cameras,
smart,
my cords, I've learned the lesson because it's happened to me twice, and now I go through there a lot.
Heathrow is, of course, the airport of London, England. And if you're beginning or ending a trip there, it's great. It's a very nice airport. The problem is it's often used for transiting. So you're flying out of Paris to London, to New York or somewhere like that. And that is a nightmare. The transit is that you have to go all the way across the airport and you have to go back through security. And they're, as you say, they're very strict. So, yeah, I'm with you on that one.
Right.
Yeah.
And I was sitting in the bulkhead, by the way, on the flight over. And I told the flight attendant, I said, we're circling, right? She goes, yeah. I go, I don't think I've ever not circled.
Yeah.
And she goes, I've done this flight 1,400 times, and I think I've not circled twice.
You know, London. I love London, and Heathrow is worth it if you're going to London. I always avoid transiting through it if I can. I'd rather go through Frankfurt or Schiphol in Amsterdam.
T5, transferring through T5, and my wife loves it because of Harrods.
Oh, she wants to go to Harrods. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, so there's your tip. Take it all out of your pocket, folks, even a chapstick.
For sure. So last week I mentioned this app called Jot, which allows you to, you know, communicate using Bluetooth. Well, here's one that someone recommended better. It's called Fire Chat. Have you heard of this one?
I have, and all the kids are using it. This is what they use at the rock festivals when there's no bandwidth.
Exactly. Because it uses mesh networking, and it could, you know, you can use it 200 feet away, which is great. So if you are out in the middle of the desert, or my wife and I actually used it on the flight the other day.
Oh, nice.
Just briefly, I went to the bathroom, and she was, you know, way up front in her seat, and it works no problem.
Right across the plane. Yeah, it's doesn't require internet access to chat with one another. You just have to be near enough. Fire Chat, free on iOS and Android.
And I just tweeted these, by the way, just in case you... You lose me or whatever. And then I got one more for you.
How's the lock? How's the lock? Are you going up or going down? What's going on? Look out the window now.
You know, I don't think we're doing anything yet. We just stopped. We're slowly going into the lock.
You're entering the lock, which means we'll lose you any minute now because you're surrounded by cement. You're in a bunker, basically.
Yeah, if it was sunny out, I would be able to show it to you.
Yeah.
But.
This is fun. I feel like I'm back on the river here. I love it. We went through 63 locks on our trip through Germany. 63 locks.
So this cruise goes from Avignon to Lyon, and we did 15. This is the 15th lock. It's
nice.
The last one.
How fun. Oh, you're almost done. Oh.
Yes.
Johnny's on the Uniworld cruises, which is what we did a couple of months ago, and I really enjoyed it. Really nice cruise line. Here's a picture of Venice. Look at that. Oh, this isn't your picture, though. This is
not mine. That was my travel Instagrammer of the week.
Yeah, Kristen Alana, who does wonderful travel photos. If you're not following Johnny on Instagram, do at Johnny Jet on the Twitter as well. All right, give me one more tip, and then we'll let you go.
Travel website of the week is called Skedaddle, S-K-E-D-A-D-D-L-E. Actually, the website's called Let's Skedaddle, or letskedaddle.com, L-E-T-S-K-E-D-A-D-D-L-E.com. Have you heard of this one?
No. It sounds like a good idea, though. Let's skedaddle. Where are we skedaddling to?
So it uses crowdsource, so you can take a luxurious bus ride anywhere. Right now they do it from Boston and New York. San Francisco is coming soon.
That sounds like an oxymoron, luxurious bus ride.
Yeah, there's actually some really nice buses out there, especially doing the New York Boston route and the DC route.
So these are luxury buses?
Stuff like that.
Mm.
But what this does is that you can create your own route. So I was just looking, there's a route from New York to Fire Island. And the first five riders pay $5. The next 10 get 10% off. And then the next ones you get the standard price. But they have to have at least 15 riders.
And then they charter it for you.
Exactly. And they have, they're all supposed to be regulated. They have buses for 12 people, 23, 36, and 55.
What a good idea. And they have interesting routes. Here's one from Boston to One Direction.
To the concert. You can create anything you want. That's just some,
Yeah, somebody created it. Here's one from Boston to Kenny Chesney. Actually, there's quite a few of those. Here's one from New York City to Fish. I guess rock. It's used often by people who want to go to rock shows. Neat.
Yeah, I think a lot of kids use it to college too.
Skedaddle, crowd-sourced bus rides. That is really neat. I like that. Johnny Jet, you are at johnnyjet.com. That is the place to go. Because he's a travel blogger, he blogs everywhere, even in the middle of a canal somewhere outside of Avignon.
And I'm on a round-the-world trip right now, so I'm going home the long way.
Where are you going after? You're on a round-the-world trip?
Yeah.
Do all the rivers connect?
No, I'm flying.
Where are you going next?
It's a secret, man. You got to follow me on Twitter, man. Or Facebook.
He always does that to me. I try. I try every time. JohnnyJet.com. It's great to see you. Have a great trip. Love to your wife. I know you're bringing the mother-in-law with you. I think that's very brave of you on the beautiful SS Catherine. There's his beautiful wife. And they're sitting in the balcony there. You can open that window and see a cement wall as the boat goes up the canal.
You're going down, actually.
You're going down? It means we're going to lose you. It's basically like you're going into a hole in the ground. Thank you, Johnny Jet. We'll talk soon.
Take care.
Bye-bye. Sorry about the quality of that call, but boy, it was fun. He's on a riverboat in the middle of France, just outside of Lyon, and he's in a canal. Now, not only that, he's in a canal, which is basically a boat elevator. They raise the river ships, river boats up, or they lower them down to meet the different parts of the river. That's kind of cool. 8888 Ask Leo is the phone number. Let me give you Johnny Jet's info. JohnnyJet.com, the website. And, of course, it's actually easy. At Johnny Jet on Instagram, at Johnny Jet on Twitter. Do follow his Instagram feed. It's always fun. And he always tweets his links. So if you miss him, we put him on our show notes at TechGuyLabs.com, but you also can follow him on Twitter. He's got some great stuff there. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Oh, he's in the chat room, too, tweeting it out there. I like that. That's great. More of your calls right after this. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888 Ask Leo. That's the phone number. Back to the phones we go. Brant is on the line from Fulton, New York. Hi, Brant. Leo Laporte.
Hi, Leo. The reason I was calling is I'm a very avid gamer, and I'm trying to find out if there's any way I can reduce my ping. What seems to happen is when I'm playing a game, and if somebody else gets on and starts watching Netflix or starts playing another game, the ping on the particular game that I'm playing seems to just go off the charts. And is there any way to reduce that?
Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah, so ping as you know, when it's used in the context of gaming, means a little more than it means technically. Technically, a ping is just hello, hello, and the time it takes to say hello to a server and get the response back. That's the ping time. But in gaming, it often is much more complex than that. It's often including latency and other information, which is useful in gaming. So they just use the word, they use the word ping, but they're reporting really more than just that. And that's why you're seeing the ping time go up, because it's your bandwidth has gone down. It's shared bandwidth, and if everybody's using it up, well, then it's going to impact your gaming, I'm afraid. So what you can do is something called QoS. True QoS is probably not available in a consumer router. It stands for quality of service. And what it means is you prioritize certain traffic. So sophisticated high-end routers, as are used perhaps by internet service providers and others, you can say, hey, anything on this port, that takes priority over everything else. People do it for Skype, for instance, or video. They don't want to have any bandwidth issues. You could probably do it at home. There are gaming routers that claim to support QoS. I used, what did I use? A D-Link for a long time, that gaming router. Asus might do it as well. Look for a gaming router, and in particular, look for a router that can support QoS. And then what you'll do in the router is it has a table, and it says, well, what kind of traffic do you want to prioritize? And you say, mine.
Okay.
Now, okay. I got to warn you, your roommates are going to be unhappy, because all of a sudden, Netflix is not going to look as good. You just don't have enough bandwidth to serve everybody.
Right, that's the thing I don't understand. The particular game that I always play and I'm talking about, it only uses about 5 MB.
What game do you play?
It's Arma 3, so it doesn't use a lot of bandwidth, and that's why I'm wondering why the ping, because everything else works. You know, that when they're watching Netflix, that works fine, and other video games, it just seems to be that one particular game, because I have 40 going down and 5 up, so I have
that's pretty good.
Plenty of bandwidth.
It's the 5 up that's a little bit part of the issue. So one of the things that does happen is if you saturate upstream, the downstream disappears. So really, the weakest link in your internet is your upstream connection.
The upstream, okay.
Yeah, and so maybe Arma real time, or is it turn based?
No, it's a real time.
It's real time. So that could be a lot of data going through there. It's a tricky thing. People in the chat room are saying they're very happy with their Asus. QoS on Asus is good for gaming.
QoS?
Yeah, okay. I think Asus makes
good. Will this be in the show notes then?
Yeah. Everything we say gets copied down there. So take a look at that. Awesome. Start if you hardwired into your router, you'd get better results, especially if the other folks are on Wi-Fi.
Yeah, my main computer that I play ARM on is hardwired. Right. The rest is Wi-Fi, okay. So I did do a hardwire for that.
Yeah.
So, all right. Well, thanks so much for your help. Love the show.
You're welcome. My pleasure. Enjoy your game. Arma 3 looks cool. This is the problem for everybody when you're living somewhere where, and nowadays this is the case, isn't it? Kids are watching movies, playing games. Mom and dad are surfing the net. I mean, you're taking all of that bandwidth that for one person was sufficient and chopping it up. In my opinion, QoS offered on consumer-grade routers is not as robust as true quality of service, but it might help. Might help. And it might be that getting a better router will help. Did you see that Google's selling a router now? That's kind of weird. We'll talk about that and answer some more calls in just a second. Muris in Coronado. Hi, Muris. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi.
Hi.
I'm having an issue with my Mac. That was very weird because yesterday I went out with my mom, and then when I came back home, I saw that the Mac said, you're out of application memory, close any programs that are unused. And I said, okay, this is weird. And I clicked the okay button. The computer wouldn't shut down, and then I had to do a full shutdown with holding down the power button.
Wow. It sounds like it was that's called a hard crash. Froze up.
Yeah.
How old is that Mac?
Well, I got it last year, so it's a 2013 model.
Okay, so it's fairly new. And, yeah. And yeah, have you been keeping it up to date with all the patches and everything?
Oh, yeah. I always check for application updates and everything.
Good. Good, Maris. yeah, you know, it's just sometimes that happens. That Mac will sit there and it's, you know, it's running stuff in the background. You probably left your email open, right?
Yeah, I usually leave that on because I like to keep track of my
I do, too. Boxes. I want it to keep downloading. Maybe a browser window is open. Sometimes browsers, what you probably saw was something we called a memory leak. I know it sounds worse than it is, but a lot of software has memory leaks where it occupies a certain amount of memory, but then a couple of things. Either it doesn't release memory after it's done with it, or it continues to occupy more memory, and that's what I think happened, until it fills it all up. There's nothing left, and the computer at that point has really no option but just to go, just to collapse. So that's all it is. It's just some program, and you should look at what programs were. If it happens again, look closely at what programs were running at the time. There's on the Macintosh.
Skype on as well that on that.
Which program?
Can I leave my Skype open.
Skype could very open. Well be do that, but you should be able to leave all that stuff open. Here's what I would do, and I do this a lot on the Mac because there are issues sometimes with behind the scenes processes. There's a program on the Mac called Activity Monitor. It's in your applications folder, in the utilities folder in there. Activity Monitor will tell you what's going on your computer, what's using the processor, but also what's using memory and energy and disk and network. So you can see all the different things that are going on. And you just keep that running once, you know, as you're, I would, you know, as you're using your computer, just to keep an eye on if something starts to really take it over. And that will be the offending program. Nothing to worry about at this point. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. This is 9%. It's not bad here. This is a little harder to know because how much memory something's using currently is not really, you know, germane, but it's kind of hard to understand. There's a non-responsive program. It's in red. That's useful. I don't know if it really is non-responsive. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy, Hour 3 of the Tech Guy Show. We're going to talk more tech. Is that okay with you? 8888 Ask Leo. I'm sure there's a cooking show over on the other channel if you prefer. I think we got Home Improvement up the dial there. But if you're a geek, or you want to be a geek, or you just have to use these tools of the devil, this is a good place to be. Computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography, smartphones, smartwatches. 8888 Ask Leo is the number if you have a question, comment, suggestion. The website, and I should really mention this more often, is techguylabs.com. It's free. There's no sign up. You just use it. But the point is that that's where everything I talk about here today and on all the shows ends up. Techguylabs.com. And we even put audio from the show and video from the show up a couple of days later. So if you miss an episode or you want to download it, you can do that all there. TechGuyLabs.com. I also encourage you to add your thoughts because it happens. I know, hard to believe, but I'll make a mistake or maybe I won't know a good solution for a problem like that Palm Pixie problem. And if you do, go to the website, add that in the comments. I really appreciate it. It's very helpful to me. Let's move on, though. The next call is from Portola Hills, California. Dave is on the line. Hi, Dave.
Hey there. How you doing, Leo?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm doing okie-dokie. Thanks for asking.
Okie-dokie's pretty darn good. It doesn't sound like you're okie-dokie from what you told Heather. What's going on?
Yeah, I was going to go online to check a license for a contract to say license for it. So I typed in the heading cslb.gov, clicked on that, and then a screen came up with a bunch of writing in it, which I didn't remember. But there was also a recording that said you may be infected with malware. And you should call this phone number in order to get it squared away.
No!
So I tried to close the window. Nothing happened.
and I just ended up rebooting the system. Nothing bad.
Yeah, and you're good, and you're golden, and you're happy.
Well, I'm afraid to go do online banking or
I don't blame you.
Shopping or any of that stuff. I don't want to do any passwords or stuff like that there.
We've seen so much. This is the last. You're the third call in a week. With this kind of stuff, it is very so. First of all, if you mistype a website, if you go to Goggle instead of Google, if you go to Tech Guy Lob instead of Tech Guy Labs, you almost always will get a malware site because these bad guys just register names that are close to that are common misspellings or typos for well-known sites, and then they put stuff on that site. Now, there's two categories of things they can put on the sites. One is fairly harmless, and I'm hoping and I'm thinking this is what happened to you. And that is what we were talking about earlier in the show, just some JavaScript code, some web code that isn't going to impact your computer. It's not going to cause any problems, but it's going to scare you. It's easy, for instance, for a website to pop up a window and say, oh, you've been infected by malware. That's bogus, and you knew it because it gave you an 800 number and they asked for money. It's bogus. So you were smart. Just turn off the computer or shut down the browser. That'll go away. Don't go back there. Did you go to the – are you sure you went to the right site for the contractor's license board?
Well, I do it pretty regularly, and unless I mistyped something, I did CSLB.gov.
CSLB?
Yeah, for Contractor's State License Board.
CSLB.gov. Let me just go there myself right now. See, I'm getting this web page is not available.
Really?
CSLB, as in boy, Contract State License Board .gov.
Huh. Yeah.
Well, anyway, I might be mistyping it myself. Contractors State. Let me Google the Contractors State License Board and see. Ah, CSLB.ca.gov.
Okay.
Did you type the CA?
I did not.
Uh-huh.
But I've done it before, and it would come up with a drop-down list, you know, and then I'd click on it. So
yeah, my suspicion is, if I go to .ca.gov for California.gov, I get it. Okay. When I went to CSLB.gov, I got nothing, which was possibly a bad site that got taken down, because that's what happens with these malware sites is law enforcement, Google, and others go after them.
Okay.
Most benign situation, most benign case. It was just some JavaScript popped something up, hoping you'd fall for it. Case
right,
over. Because JavaScript, JavaScript doesn't invade your computer. Now, and then these are important questions. Are you keeping your computer up to date?
Yes.
So this is why you want to install. For instance, Microsoft did what they call an out-of-cycle patch earlier this week. Normally, Microsoft patches on the second Tuesday of every month. They did an emergency patch for Internet Explorer for all versions of Windows this week, on Tuesday of this week, because it was such a heinous problem that every version of Windows was vulnerable to, and the bad guys were taking advantage of it. It was called a zero-day exploit. There's 0 days between the time the flaw is discovered and the time the bad guys start to exploit it. And so Microsoft, immediately put out a patch. But if you're patching those patches whenever you get them, you're making sure. What browser do you use?
Windows 7.
Okay, so you're using Internet Explorer.
Chrome.
See, good. Chrome and Firefox both update automatically without any notice to you. It's a good idea to close Chrome and Firefox periodically because they have to be restarted to update. But if you do about Chrome, you'll see if you're up to date. Chrome is much safer, by the way, than Internet Explorer.
I got rid of that a while ago.
Yeah, you're smart to be using Chrome. But then there's other things that can sometimes be taken advantage of if there's a flaw in the operating system. That's why Microsoft patches those regularly. If a bad site, let's say I said, I'm going to do CSLB.gov, see who I get. And I make a bad site, what I'll do is I'll buy a kit of exploits. They're for sale on the internet for as little as $50 that might have hundreds of different little scripts on there to bang on operating systems to find a hole. And then if they find, you know, if they don't find it, no, nothing happens. If they find it, then they can sometimes take advantage of that and put bad stuff on your computer. But if you're keeping your operating system up to date, your browser up to date, anything that goes online up to date, your Adobe Reader, for instance, Adobe has been lately a source of real problems. Adobe Flash. That's why I like Chrome, because Chrome automatically updates Flash. Anything that goes on online can be potentially taken advantage of. But if you've been very good at updating, which sounds like you have, then it's highly unlikely anything infected your computer.
Okay, so I'm not at the computer now, but when I get home, I should just double check, go into About Chrome and make sure that I've
Make sure it's up to date, and do that periodically anyway. The other thing I would do on Windows is Microsoft, first of all, the good news is Microsoft now has, on Windows 10 and Windows 8, ships an antivirus. It's built in. It's called Defender. On Windows 7, you can download Security Essentials. That's all you really need. Problem with antivirus is these zero-day exploits. They can't get updated fast enough to protect you because these things happen so fast. So Microsoft also has something called a malicious software removal tool. They update that every month. You don't see it. It's hidden. But it's not a bad idea if you think maybe I got infected. You hit Windows R, the Windows key and R, that opens a run box, and type MRT. And there's no icon, there's no menu item. I don't know why Microsoft hides this program, but they do. Type MRT, and that'll run it, and then do a thorough scan, and that'll give you some semblance of confidence that you didn't get infected. There's always the risk, and, you know, I mean, the prudent thing any security expert would tell you is if you think you might be infected, you should format and reinstall Windows. I don't think you were. I think you got a very common JavaScript pop-up. Those are harmless. Okay.
Well, I feel a bunch better, and I'll check good on these things.
And now you know why you update all the time. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Yeah, MRT has the same issue, of course, as an antivirus, which is it's not going to find 0 days until later. You know, 3 weeks later, it'll find the 0 day. But it's good to just, you know, scan for that. 8888-ASK-LEO. That's the number. Such a distinctive voice, huh? We're talking high tech. Google surprised everyone this week, announcing a new hardware device. You don't really think too much of Google and hardware. I guess they bought Nest, so they have the Nest thermostat. They have the Dropcam. They've made these phones, I mean, Nexus phones and tablets. But I always think of those as more a kind of a reference version of what an Android device should be. So it surprised me a little when they announced earlier this week that they were going to sell a Wi-Fi router, of all things, an expensive $200 Wi-Fi router called the On Hub. And but when you read the specs, you kind of feel like, oh, wow, this is kind of state-of-the-art. I've recommended in the past more expensive Wi-Fi routers like the Asus, which I really like a lot, the Apple AirPort Extreme. Good routers tend to cost an upwards of $100. And I think a lot of us just, you know, look at those cheap routers from Linksys and say, well, why not just get a $40 or $50 router? But increasingly, I think the performance of your router and the reliability and, most importantly, the security of your router calls for maybe buying something a little more expensive. I find it interesting that Google was going $200 on this router. But when you read the specs, it's kind of interesting. 13 antennas in it. By the way, it's pretty. It doesn't look like it has 13 antennas. It looks just like a cylinder with a lighted ring in it. But the 13 antennas are used to test for congestion. There are 11 Wi-Fi bands, and what it does is apparently is it looks at each band and finds the least congested and does that periodically. So it moves around a little bit with the idea of keeping your Wi-Fi performant. This has become a big problem, is Wi-Fi congestion. It does some other interesting and somewhat state-of-the-art things using 802.11ac, which is the latest Wi-Fi spec. You can, they say, prioritize a device. I guess this is QoS. Different devices and activities need different amounts of bandwidth put yours where it matters most, like your smart TV when you stream a movie or your game. It's controlled through your Android or iOS device. That makes it convenient. They call it living room ready. They say a lot of routers are so ugly you tend to hide them in closets or behind things. But that's bad for Wi-Fi. Wi-Fi likes to be line of sight. So they say OnHub's tidy cords and tucked away antennas mean you can leave it out in the open for the best possible coverage. But I think really my guess is, and by the way, they sold out immediately. I ordered it within an hour of the announcement, and I still am not going to get mine till next month. Some people are going to get it sooner. I'm not getting mine till, I'm sorry, October, next month, month after next. Some people are going to get theirs a little bit earlier. And if you went there now, or Amazon, or Walmart, or other places that are selling the OnHub, all of them sold out. So a lot of interest in this. I think the really interesting thing is it supports something that Google calls Weave, which is a mesh network designed for home automation. I think we're gonna enter an interesting era of home automation soon, where Apple, Google, Microsoft are all going to be attempting to become the center for your, and Samsung too with SmartThings, the center of your home automation. It also includes something called Bluetooth Smart Ready. Okay. And 802.15.4, which is another interesting protocol. This is a very interesting piece of hardware, and I'm really curious what the long game is for Google on this. Because right now, it's just a Wi-Fi router, an expensive Wi-Fi router. But I have a feeling there will be more to this than meets the eye, and that in time, more capabilities will be added. 802.15.4, whatever that is. Actually, if you look it up, and I did, it's a standard which supports personal area networks, low-rate nearby networks. I think it's going to be for home automation. It's what Zigbee does. It uses that. So I think it's going to be very interesting to see what happens. Steve's on the line from San Diego, California. Hi, Steve. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo. Hey, last week got a ultra high definition television.
Oh, congratulations.
Thank you. And was really impressed at the store with all the 4K images that they're showing.
then you get home.
and find out that even though upscaling is nice, it's just regular 1080p, there's not a lot of 4K content out there. Right. And I'm wondering, gosh, am I going to get caught in a Betamax situation one of these days?
Well, I mean, the same thing happened. Remember when HD came out, you'd get an HD TV, but you'd still be watching I Love Lucy and SD broadcast for some time. We've talked about this with Scott Wilkinson, our home theater guy. Movies are 4K. You know, motion pictures are 4K. The issue is delivering them. And 4K takes a lot of bandwidth. And so while you can get 4K on YouTube right now, it's so compressed that it doesn't really look that great. There will be 4K Blu-ray players, and those are going to come in the next couple of months, by the end of the year. So that's good because you can buy a disc player that will support your nice new TV. Problem is how many discs will be available. And just as in the early days of Blu-ray, it was just going to be a handful of movies to start. So you're a little bit ahead of the curve. Think of it as a very nice TV for playing HD content. And over the next couple of years, UHD will start to emerge, and you'll be ready when it does.
Mm-hmm. I know that I subscribe to Netflix. Netflix does have a 4K option for streaming.
If you have the bandwidth.
Right. And then also DirecTV does some 4K, but very limited titles.
Yeah, and it's going to be because it's satellite and bandwidth is especially dear on a satellite. You only have a limited number of transponders. It's probably going to be heavily compressed as well. If you have enough bandwidth, and I think Netflix says you need, I seem to remember, 50 megabits down. Let me look and see what they say. Then you'll be able to see it in House of Cards, for instance. And they say 25 megabits. So most people have that now, right?
Sure.
The problem is 25 megabits, as Netflix describes it and as your internet service provider describes it, might not be quite the same thing. Internet service providers say as fast as 25 megabits, but does that mean you'll be able to get it? You need consistent, you know, hour after hour, 25 megabits to do that.
Right.
But they are shooting, the House of Cards was shot on in 4K. First season was delivered as 1080p. The second season is now 4K. So, yeah, there's going to be, I don't think it's a Betamax situation. No.
Good.
I think there's going to be content. I just think it's not going to be today. It's going to slowly ramp up. If you notice, though, almost all the new TVs are 4K capable.
Right.
So that's a good sign. That means the support is there for the playback devices. Now we just have to get the content. And since movie companies shoot, in most cases, in 4 or higher, that'll be there. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. You hear the auto-tune in that song. So auto-tune is originally invented. In fact, it's been around for ages, radio station. I've been using something similar called a harmonizer in radio for 25 years. The idea is using digitization to change the pitch without speeding it up or slowing it down. You know, you could always do it on a tape machine by slowing down the tape. That'd make it deeper. Or speeding it up to make it higher. That's how Alvin and the Chipmunks were created. But once digital technology became commonplace, you could do that by just taking little bits out without speeding anything up. And for a long time, they used it, and I think it's still often used to fix poor singing. Surprising number of people who are professional singers can't stay on note. They're off key. But thanks to AutoTune, easy, push a button, perfect. Then somebody, and it all started with Cher. I blame Cher. Remember that song? Was it I Believe? Thought, you know, if you really mess with the AutoTune, it has a interesting effect. And now you can't get away from it. Every pop song has it. It just bugs me. Maybe I'm an old man. That must be it. I liked AutoTune when it just fixed it. Now they're overdoing it. 8888 Ask Leo. Elliot in Boston. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Elliot.
Hi, I was in the studio few days ago, you might have heard.
I remember. Yeah.
Yeah.
Can I have that thing back that you took?
Which thing?
No, I'm kidding you.
I got a bobblehead.
Yeah, John says hi.
Tell him I say hi back.
Oh, good.
All right. I just had a question because I noticed you talked about, I think it was on Twitter or something, that about unroll.me to unsubscribe.
Yeah, isn't that cool? Unroll.me, yeah.
I was wondering if there's something that worked with a Verizon email.
Ah. Does Verizon use its own service or do they use Yahoo or something?
Well, they use Yahoo. Yahoo. But so when I did Verizon.net, it Unroll.me just said it was incorrect.
Yeah. So I love the idea of Unroll.me. It's a free service. Unroll.me is the website that will go through your inbox and unsubscribe you from newsletters and mailing lists that you might have inadvertently signed up for. But unfortunately, it doesn't work with, first of all, one thing that may be a showstopper for some people, you have to give it your access to your email. But of course, that's how it works.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, I don't think it works with all email providers. In fact, a lot of these services only work with Gmail. Let me see if it works with Yahoo Mail. I'll give it my Yahoo Mail address, see if it works with that.
All right.
It works. Yeah, it does. Google, Yahoo, Outlook.com, and other. Oh, I wrote Yoohoo. No wonder it was puzzled. Okay, Yahoo does work. Of course, you'll have to give it your password. Now, since Verizon uses Yahoo, I'll have to ask the chat room if they know. Is there if you're a Verizon customer and it's using Yahoo as the back end, is there a way to get your Yahoo mail address? Or is it only I bet it's only at Verizon.net. How old are you, Elliot?
I'm 12.
How many newsletters do you get?
I have like a billion a day.
You're not supposed to, you know, you're under 13. You're not supposed to sign up for these without parental consent.
True.
And now you know why, by the way. That's the Child
Yes.
Online Privacy and Protection Act, COPPA. And the idea, U.S. Congress passed that law, the idea was to protect youngsters like you and your malleable minds from too much commercialization, from advertising. And maybe even more importantly, protect your privacy so companies like Facebook can't collect information about you. So to create a Facebook, do you have a Facebook account?
Yeah.
You see, you're just going around this stuff because you're supposed to be 13. It even says you must be 13 to make a Facebook account. Problem with you, Elliot, is you're too smart. You're smarter than the average 12-year-old.
Thank you.
Yes. So you've just kind of actually, I have a 12-year-old and he gets around it all too. Everybody does. I bet you go to school and people are saying, hey, here's how you get around that. Here's how you get around that. They're sharing that information. So, you know what you should do? Create a free account at Yahoo or Google. You're going to have to lie about your age again. And use that for signups from now on. In fact, this would be a good thing for everybody to do. But if you start now, you know, by the time you're an adult, this will really solve a lot of spam issues. When you sign up for stuff, use that address instead. You know, make an address like ElliotSpamBox@Yahoo.com. And when you sign up, use that. And then they'll bother that guy. It's good to have access to that account because sometimes there'll be stuff in there you want, but it doesn't fill up your main email. In fact, in general, I don't recommend and I don't use my internet service provider's email.
It's
what you got. It's your first email. All your friends and family know it.
Yeah. I was thinking about switching, but...
Well, you don't have to switch because you don't have to get rid of the other one. These are free accounts. So you can set up one at Outlook.com or Yahoo.com or Gmail.com. And those are all free.
Yep.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. And then, eventually what you should do, in fact, parents, you should do this for your kids, is register a domain name for yourself. When a kid is born, you should not name a child John Smith. You should search the internet to find a unique, unused domain name. You know, XYZ Zebediah Smith. Then you can get that, XYZZebediahSmith.com. And then you can have the email sent there and forwarded to any other email account you want. So for the rest of your life, you got one internet address. In fact, I predict, Elliot, if we still make phone calls when you're a grown-up, we may not, but if we do, that you'll also have one phone number that follows you for the rest of your life.
Yeah.
Right? Wouldn't that be great? Then you don't have to tell people, oh, I've changed my number or I've changed my address. You just have that address.
I had to do that before because I got robocalls.
Who are you going to vote for in the election, Elliot?
Don't know.
Oh, yeah, okay. Are you a registered voter?
No.
No. Good, because that would be a felony. I love the idea of having a dedicated address, but you've just pinpointed one little problem. If you have one phone number, maybe that's why I get so many worthless phone calls, because I've had that same number for years now. Everybody knows it.
Oh, yeah, it just keeps spreading online.
Yeah, it just spreads. Same thing with my email. The nice thing, though, about having one email address is you can use a service to forward it. So register the domain at somewhere like GoDaddy or Hover.com. Don't buy their email service. Just buy email forwarding and then forward it to Gmail. Gmail has great anti-spam anyway.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Verizon has, like, the worst anti-spam ever.
Yeah, think about it. Why would Verizon not want to block spam?
Well, because they are spam.
Oh, that's it! You are smart, Elliot. Well beyond your years.
Thank you.
I'm sorry. Were you here when I wasn't here?
Yeah, I was here on Thursday for know-how.
Oh, I'm sorry. I missed you. Come back again, okay?
Yeah, we came all the way from Boston just to come to Twits.
Now you're making me feel terrible.
That's fine.
Thanks, Elliot. I'll see you soon. I hope you come back. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. That's fine. What a nice kid. John remembers you. Our show today brought to you by Epson and their new workforce printers, which I use at home. In fact, I had the old workforce printers. When they came out with these new precision core printers, I immediately upgraded here and at home because they are incredible. You know what? Epson is knocking it out of the park with their stuff. You saw they just released printers with big ink tanks that last a whole year. They're not a company trying to take advantage of you. They're a company that's making great technology for business. The new workforce printers use ink. They're ink. Well, I don't even want to call them inkjet, but they're ink printers, not laser printers. But they're more efficient. The cost per page, and this is a big change, up to half the cost of a color laser printer. They're using these new precision core technologies, which come from industrial printers. 40 million dots per second. And so precise, so accurate, beautiful printouts, very high resolution, with minimum ink usage. So you get very high quality, very high speed printing. They say print shop quality. I'd agree. It really looks good. Vibrant colors, clear, crisp text. The high resolution Epson print chips are one of the fastest inkjet printing technologies in the world. Great for mobile device printing, too, because they have Wi-Fi, workgroup connectivity. They support Apple's AirPrint and Google's CloudPrint. I can print from here to my workforce at home using CloudPrint. You'll cut costs. You won't compromise quality. You'll keep your business moving forward. And other reasons to prefer them over laser, there's no warm-up time. You can print on a variety of media. You don't have to just get certain, you know, bond paper. You can print on a bunch of stuff, including labels. Very energy efficient. They really have created the next generation of inkjet performance. It's beyond laser, and it's fabulous, and I have them everywhere. Epson.com. In fact, she said, I have to have one in my office. I said, okay. Epson.com, and find out what the new workforce printers can do for you and your business. Epson.com. Epson, built to perform. We really do love those printers. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Elliot came up. I was talking with Elliot off the air, our 12-year-old who wanted to use Unroll.me on his Verizon email. He said, well, what if I forwarded my Verizon email to a Gmail account? Would it then let me use Unroll.me and unsubscribe me and clean up the spam? And I said, oh, yeah, you could do that. You're right. That's smart. Smarter than me, that kid. Dick DiBartolo is here. Thank God.
Yeah, someone more your style.
He is Mad Magazine's maddest writer, and he's also our GizWiz. Every week joins us with a gadget or a gizmo. Hey, Dickie D!
Yes, sir. So, big deal. So, he's learning Java. I made a cup of Java today. By myself.
12 years old. It's amazing. I mean, when I was 12 years old, I was banging rocks on my head.
Yeah. At 12, I learned how to wave bye-bye.
Yeah. Yeah, I was struggling with tying my shoes still.
Well, that you still do.
That's why I got the Velcro. Yeah, it's good. I don't have to ever do that again. So what do you got for us?
I have a backstory for this gadget, and then you can tell me, as a father of two kids when they were back in college, if this rings a bell.
Okay.
So this lady goes to visit her son at college and he's going to show her the dorm room. She goes in and freaks out when she sees the condition of the sheet he's sleeping on. She said, "How? What? Ma, it's a fitted sheet. Like they're hard to change." So,
oh my!
She decides there's got to be a better way, and she comes up with a system called Simple Sheets. And what it is, it's a set of sheets. It has two unique things about it. The best is the fitted sheet has a Velcro strip all around the top. So instead of changing this sheet, you just rip that Velcro part off, put the second one on, and then if you're not going to change sheets for 2 weeks, you have 2 weeks to launder the top of the fitted sheet.
Why does it just make them out of paper and throw them out?
Yeah, maybe that's a good idea. And then it also has a little Velcro electronic pockets that can go anywhere on the mattress, so you can keep your cell phone and your TV remote and everything close on by. And it's they're sized for dorm beds. And I did not know this before I found out about Simple Sheets. But dorm beds are, the majority of them are 5 inches longer than standard twin beds.
Oh.
Yeah, that's so that when they get tall students, they don't have to worry about it.
Right.
The beds feet fit everybody. So you can get the starter set with the four sheets and the little add-on pillow. The little add-on pocket is $48.
Yeah, so people in the chat room are saying, if you don't teach children how to change their sheets and wash them, I mean, what is going to happen? Are they going to have disposable sheets for the rest of their life?
Well, you know, probably a 12-year-old by the time he's 18.
He's going to figure it out. Yeah.
He's going to have sheets on a roll. So you just go and you pull it down, cut off a thing, sleep on it.
It used to get so bad when I was in college that my roommate and I would hang our laundry out the window because we didn't want it in the room with us.
Oh, you mean the dirty laundry?
Yeah, we just hang it out the window.
Oh, I thought you washed it.
That doesn't work. It doesn't get clean or anything. It just hangs out the window.
Wow.
Yeah, in a laundry bag. Yeah, I guess eventually.
Smell you? Is that where you went to school?
Yeah, smell of you. Simple Sheets are at simple-sheets.com. How much are they?
$48 for the set.
A lot of colleges have laundry service where you could, you know, every week you
bring. Oh!
Yeah. But if you don't know how to take a fitted sheet off, I guess that's another problem entirely. You'll find more of this wonderful stuff at GizWiz.biz. That's Dick's website. Great place to go to. Just click the link, you know, the GizWiz visits the tech guy. But there's also all sorts of other stuff from Dick's regular appearances on ABC. I think you just did an ABC World News Now, didn't you?
I did.
What was the subject matter of that?
The subject was back to school.
Oh, of course. Did you do these sheets?
Which is why I found these. Yeah, I did. Oh, I thought they were kind of unique.
It wasn't just me.
No. It wasn't just your kids who didn't never change sheets.
It's universal. He also has the What the Heck Is It game. We're still trying to figure out what the heck this grooved, stylus-looking device is. You'll have to the end of the month, so about another week to figure that out. You're playing for the very funny Mad Magazine with Hillary and Bill on the cover as Mad Max, Furious Road to the White House. That's fun. GizWiz.biz. Don't forget GizWiz.tv. That's where you'll catch Dick's weekly podcast with Chad Johnson, OMG Chad. And sometimes you do something called the Giz Fizz a little later on in the Saturday afternoon.
Yeah, I will do it tonight.
This is here, Podcast Network. Thank you, Dickie D.
Thank you, sir.
Talk to you soon. You know what? That's what we should ask Dick, if there's a way. Is he still there? Dick, is there? Yep. Do you know of a way to fold fitted sheets?
No.
You? No, I want one. Would you work on that? A gadget that takes fitted sheets and folds them?
Yeah.
I end up rolling them up in a ball.
I was just going to say.
Stuffing them in the cupboard.
I have my own technique, but they're quite wrinkled. When I'm done.
Do people still iron sheets?
I doubt it.
Yeah. And then if you iron a fitted sheet, you got to fold it up somehow to keep the wrinkles out.
You know what? If you look online, I think there is a video on how to fold
Martha
a folded
Stewart,
sheet.
Probably. Yeah.
Probably. Yeah.
When I was in prison, one of the problems we encountered. Fitted
That's
sheets.
Very funny.
Thank you, Dickie D.
Okay, buddy. I'll see you next week.
See you next week. We got enough time, I think, to field another call. Robert in Pasadena. You'll be our last call of the day. Hi, Robert.
Hey, how you doing, Leo?
I'm well.
First time calling you.
Well, thank you for finding your way here. What can I do for you?
Well, I'm kind of a computer geek, but I can't program in Java, but I can sure drink a cup of it.
That's all right. Java's old hat now.
Okay. I'm an aspiring filmmaker, and for now I'm using a DSLR and plan to move up to a decent prosumer camcorder. And I want to be able to record great sound for the video.
Yes.
And
Sound is the hard part. It, you can record excellent video now. I was talking to my friend Becky Worley, who does pieces on Good Morning America, ABC's morning show. She shoots these on her iPhone. They're broadcast quality, even with your phone nowadays. And certainly any DSLR is going to, in fact, get better video than a camcorder in most cases because of interchangeable lenses. But the issue is always audio. And audio, as we were talking about with Scott, is just as important as video. If the audio is bad, you can have the best looking video in the world and people are not going to be happy. So here's what I would look for. There's a company called Beachtech, B-E-A-C-H-T-E-K. They make devices. If you get, if you have a DSLR that has a mini jack for the microphone, and most of them nowadays do, you plug the Beachtech into there, and now you can plug real microphones into it. So you could get a wireless system. You, those are expensive and hard to, you know, you have to pay a lot for a good wireless system. I'm talking more than $1,000. Or use wired microphones, wired lavaliers. If you trim the mic wires in such a way they're not visible, you're going to get the best sound. They're not expensive. You're going to get a much better, you can use shotgun mics, you can use handheld mics. Beachtech is the solution, and it's an interface to your standard DSLR and professional microphones. Works great. I'm out of time. Thank you to Heather Hamm and the Phone Ranger, our musical director, Nathan Staten. Thanks to you. We'll see you next time. Have a great Geek Week. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy show for today. I'm Leo Laporte. Thank you so much for joining us. Don't forget, the Tech Guy is just the tip of the iceberg. We do nearly 30 shows now on the Twit Netcast Network, and you'll find them all at twit.tv. We talk about Windows and Windows Weekly, Macintosh and MacBreak Weekly, iPad on iPad Today. You get your daily dose of tech news from Tech News Today and our weekly roundtable show, This Week in Tech. It's all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next time with another great Tech Guy podcast. Thanks for joining me. See you next time.